We want to thank you very much for being with us. Senior counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, author of the new report, The War Comes Home, The Excessive Militarization of American Policing. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. And that does it for our broadcast today. A fond farewell to Democracy Now! Video fellow Messiah Rhodes, who's worked with us for the past year. He just got back from Ferguson, Missouri, and it was wonderful to work with him in Staten Island as we covered the Eric Garner case and protests. Messiah, we wish you the very best. Your talent and promise is immeasurable. We're just looking forward to all that you do in the future. A very happy birthday to Hani Massoud. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikhsdi, Martina Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Daniel Begun, Anna Ozbeck, Messiah Rhodes, and Sam Riddell. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira, engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Gadars. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views from Henry Ford College. Yes, college is back in session. Oh boy, fall semester starts. It's very exciting around here. Classes actually started yesterday, August 28th, and people are very busy on campus getting their textbooks and getting to their first classes, and it's always very exciting, you know, a chance to grow and develop and be better. Oh my goodness. Also, Labor Day weekend coming up. So happy Labor Day weekend, people. If you're going to be out on the roads this weekend, remember, be very careful with your driving and try to just have fun and do it safely. In the studio with me today, very honored to have, in addition to my WHFR news director, John Conroy. Hi, John.
Hello, Jay. Okay. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's just a mic check thing, you know. Yeah. I have the president of Henry Ford College, Dr. Stan Jensen. President Jensen, welcome to the journal. I typically invite the college president every fall because there's so many new things happening, so many things that have been accomplished in the last year, but so many things coming up. It's always exciting to get the word from the person at the top. And you presented what's called a State of the College Address to the college organization earlier this week. Tell us how things look just in general for the fall semester, enrollment, new initiatives, right. Just in general, what's some of the highlights?
Well, thank you, Jane. Good to be on your program, and thanks for your service to this community and to this, of course, radio station, which we appreciate a great deal. Yeah, some of the highlights are that in the last year, I've been here now 16 months, but in those last 16 months, we have seen our budget, of course, get much healthier. When I came here, we had $16.6 million shortfall in that current budget. Glad to report that at the end of June of this past summer, now we had a $3.4 million surplus in that budget. So it's about a $20 million positive swing. So That's due to everybody here, every employee, every group, vendors, and a lot of team effort to make that happen. So we are in much more solid footing now.
And that includes our president here. He took a pay cut himself.
I did. Yes,
so, I mean, everybody
right.
did. But,
that's right.
You know, we're together on this. Now, we're just praying that nobody needs a pay cut next year.
That's right. Me too. No, I don't think there will be.
Yeah.
And we were planning in our current budget, this fiscal year right now, to perhaps have a increase in the tuition this January. That will not be needed because because of the other great news, and that is we are the only community college in the state of Michigan of the 28 community colleges that will be up in enrollment this year. Mm-hmm. So it looks like we'll be up about 2-3%. We'll know that in a few more days. But so we're very thankful for that. We had budgeted for an 8% decrease, being the conservative souls that we are. But so if we're 2% up, obviously that's another, that's a 10% positive right way to go. And so we will have, we'll put that money back into our students and other programs and those kind of things. So, and one of the things we're working on real hard is getting reserves. We didn't have really any reserves when I got here and had burned through those. And but now we are almost 2 years ahead of a five-year plan to get our reserves back up to about $20 million.
So. And I should say, you know, cities need a budget reserve, certainly because it's kind of cyclical with property taxes.
That's right.
Although most people assume that property values always go up. Well, it wasn't true a few years
That's
ago
right.
here in Detroit. But it's a little more of an up-down enrollment thing with community colleges. Of course, the legislature, that sort of funding is very political. But, you know, in the times when there's just fewer students looking for jobs, since most of our money comes from student tuition and
yes,
fees,
that's right.
We have to have money there to carry us over until the enrollment goes back up. So every community college in Michigan notices, and four-year schools too, to a certain extent, notices the enrollment numbers going up and down at a rather surprising rate every couple of years.
Yes, and you know, the whole truth, you know, is that last year we were leading all the community colleges in a downward spiral as far as our enrollment of a minus 23%. This year we're up 2-3%, so that's a big swing in the right direction. We're very thankful for that. And you're right, and the reserves, $20 million reserves, for instance, would be about 3 months worth of bills.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like in your own household, everybody's trying to get to that level or something. Some people say, you know, 6 months, whatever. But it is important to have reserves because we do also have some months where we get very little income and we have to be able to make it through those. So it's really a healthy thing to be doing and certainly not excessive.
Why do you think we have that increased enrollment this year and we're sort of all alone in terms of community colleges? There's so many things we're doing new that you helped to institute in the last year.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. There's no one thing. We have worked really hard with the Welcome Center and with answering everything from the phones better to customer service, student services improving. We really treasure our students, and that's starting to come across. It's not perfect, but it's certainly a lot better. We have great faculty that are reaching out to our students. We have great staff that are working really hard to look at our students as customers that we know we want to serve and that are extremely important to us. We've also started to do more just in the last few weeks, so it's not a big contributor to this fall, I don't think, but more marketing. And so you might see billboards and newspaper articles and ads and TV and radio, this station being one of those. Carrying our message. And we have a new logo, a new name, you probably know, and it's, of course, Henry Ford College. And it isn't dropping anything, really, or going away from any commitment to our community. It is really adding more things, such as four-year degrees and the University Center and more offerings, more things that our students here in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights can get involved in.
And I want to talk about those more specifically because there's so many different populations, if you will, of students that we can serve because of many of these special programs really targeting where they're coming from. The Welcome Center, you mentioned it, and there has been a Welcome Center here, but it was just like one desk in one building years ago.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
one desk in one
right,
building. And
yeah.
now it's pretty much an entire building just to the north of our main parking lot here. And I walked in there just a couple months ago. I was there for the opening, but now you're greeted by friendly people. In fact, one of our telecom students, she was hired not as a greeter, like I think a Walmart, but as a concierge.
That's right.
We have concierge. And I was saying, can you schedule me a dinner and a movie somewhere? You know, can you take my luggage and my briefcase and bring it? But so it's so well organized. And whatever you need, there's even some, and this sounds a little crazy, folks, but there's some color-coded signs to get you from one place to another if you need financial aid or you need advice on class counseling. And it's just, I think it's just a fantastic facility. And again, previously, people came here, they had a, used to be a massive mailing of our class schedule to like almost, 100,000 copies went out in the mail to this Dearborn and the surrounding areas. And people would just come by and take this or that. And there was only a very small little area for counseling and registration.
Right.
And now, of course, people can communicate by email and use our internet website. But now there's these wonderful, welcoming people in all these areas. And we really have a well run and well-organized way to welcome people to this college.
Yes, we have great staff over there. I've been involved with some of the training and education with them, as well as many others. Dr. Lisa Capru, one of our vice presidents, heads up a lot of that, and Holly Diamond is a great registrar, and many, many on those two leaders' teams. And every one of them makes a big difference to our students. And you're right, I'm glad you noticed the color coding. So we have visual control systems now where, you come in, I don't expect anybody to know what in the world an articulation agreement is even. It's not normal nomenclature for people to know. But everybody knows A, B, C, everybody knows 1, 2, 3, and everybody knows green, red, and yellow and those kind of things. So we've tried to color code. There's 7 steps that a typical student would go through. They're color-coded. Each step is different color and different numbers. And so it's easier to navigate. And we want to serve our students extremely well, and I think that's beginning to happen. We're answering the phone. We did a team on that, and it's getting much, much better.
John?
Yes, and I also partook in the Welcoming Center a few weeks ago when it first, on the early registration part of it.
One of their first open houses.
Right, one of their first open houses, and they had aptitude testing type program going on as well, and I thought that was an excellent way to show where your strengths might be and or weaknesses could be that could be improved on by taking a certain class.
That's right. We want our students to make decisions as early as they can. And that helps them then be seamless in going through this. And we've got the University Center now starting this fall with 4 partners from other universities where you can not only get an associate's degree here and eventually a 4-year degree in culinary arts here, but other colleges and universities like Eastern Michigan and University of Michigan next door, Siena Heights and others that will be located right on our campus here in the middle of Dearborn, and you can finish your baccalaureate and even a master's degree here.
It's just it's a great reawakening of what's happening at this school. It's great.
Yeah. And if people are living at home in the Dearborn or nearby surrounding area, it's all here. They just keep coming here. And of course, the financial picture is just fantastic because of the money they can save by perhaps commuting. And you mentioned something in your State of the College, too. There's even a chance if students wanted to come here we can give them room and board in the new facility that U of M D.
Right. It's a third party owns the dorms across the street from us and across the street from University of Michigan Dearborn. And there's about 500 beds there currently. And the third party owns that. The university doesn't own it. We don't own it. But they have reached out to us in collaboration, full knowledge with the university. And many of our students are staying over this fall. We had about 16 last fall, which we didn't even advertise it this year. Yeah. Some of our student athletes from, for instance, Ohio are living there. And this is the first year, by the way, that our student athletes now have some scholarships.
Okay.
Wow. And we're the last in our conference to get scholarships. So we're very excited about that. We have a terrific group of student athletes.
Let's go back to the 4-year degree program, which is besides the 3+1 degrees that are possible right here on this campus, the state of Michigan has given permission for us to institute, I guess, in a couple different categories, but these 4-year programs, baccalaureate degrees, BAs, but the first one is going to be culinary arts.
Yeah, there's 4 areas that community colleges can grant baccalaureates in now. Only one of them really appeals to us, and that is the culinary arts. Mm-hmm. And we have a great, strong culinary arts program right here in this building. And we are very interested in adding, again, we'll continue the associate's degree, but adding a 4-year baccalaureate in culinary arts, in hospitality, those kind of things. And so that will help restaurants, help entrepreneurs start their own restaurants or their own. And, of course, we all love to eat, so a lot of our students will be a part of that. And very excited about that. Hopefully, hopefully, we have to get accreditation yet, and we're working on that this year. Hopefully, a year from now, we'll start that first class of four-year degrees in culinary arts.
I have a relative by a previous marriage who is he's definitely a senior citizen, and he lives in Dearborn. So I believe that's one of the... Do we still have senior citizen tuition free?
Yes, we do. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I don't think that gets mentioned enough.
No, it doesn't.
I heard it last fall just in passing, and I knew we had it years ago. And so if you're legally a resident of Dearborn, folks, the tuition, you don't have to pay. You have to fill out some forms to prove you live here. But
yeah, 65.
Yeah.
65.
Now, that's this my relative's situation, too. Besides that, in terms of tuition and being, of course, inexpensive, and of course it's only, I think you said, I wasn't aware of the actual rate for in district, $87
yes.
a credit hour, and,
right.
and most classes are 3 hours credit, so that's about $250 or so, plus fees and books as needed,
right.
Lab materials and so on. But still, where can you get, folks, just in general, if anybody doesn't know, you know, I think all college is super expensive. Where can you get a full college class, a full 3 hour credit college class, which is in fact 16 weeks of study, usually 3 hours a week, so almost 48 to 50 hours of instruction in class and lab time and research that you have to do for that class. So where can you get that for $250 plus fees? That is absolutely one of the best deals of a lifetime if you're trying to improve yourself.
Exactly.
And of course, I know it takes more than one class, but still, that's just
great,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Great value, and we are committed to keeping that low. We have great quality as well, and all of our four-credit classes transfer pretty much anywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We have formal 3+1, as you said, with many universities, with the University of Michigan, 2+2. And so those are certainly a way. You know, I'm working on an article right now. It's not done yet, but I'd love to come back and highlight it here. But
anytime.
That shows, you know, every headline that's worth anything is saying how outrageous the cost of higher education is, which I agree with that, actually, in universities.
In general,
in general. But now, for us at Henry Ford, I know you can be a part of the early college or a part of the collegiate academy or dual credit. Those are paid for already by our collaboration with the state and with the high schools here in Dearborn.
Right.
And so you can graduate from high school and from our college, which, for instance, we just had this happen last year. One of our students, an RN, graduating the same year with an associate's degree in RN, a nursing, and a high school diploma, and at 19 started working for Henry Ford Health Systems and making, you know, averages about $50,000. So I didn't make $50,000 at 19. I was still paying those tall bills, you know, and racking those up. So there, the article will point out, yeah, a lot of places have runaway tuition and so on, but we don't. And we're really working hard at being efficient, effective, and serving our community and our southeastern part of the Michigan, and in fact, all over the world.
Now, we should say the Collegiate Academy, this is for the students who are already part of Dearborn Public Schools. That does require a qualification. You
yes.
have to pass certain exams.
Yep.
They've started in their junior year.
They start in
high school.
There's the two programs.
Year.
It's hard to differentiate them, but there's distinct difference. The collegiate program, you start in your freshman year, with the early college. Now, the early college, we just moved right here on our campus, on our main campus, and there's about 300 students involved with that. These are high schoolers. They start as a freshman, and they come right to our campus, and this is all medical field related.
Okay.
Next year, we'll double that, and it'll become manufacturing as well as healthcare. And so that'll be good. The Collegiate Academy, they're still staying in their high schools for the first 2 years, taking some college classes and, of course, high school classes there. And then they come to our college, for other college classes in their junior and senior year, but just as kind of independent people. The early college, they're all in a group.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have just put $1 million into a new center for them. It's great. It's wonderful. They'll occupy that next week. And it is, come by. You should look at it. And it's stunning. Mm-hmm. And it'll be really serving them. Then we'll double that population next year.
You're going to leave something left for the K-12 to do.
Oh, yes. They're a wonderful partner. And Superintendent Whiston is a great partner with us. And we appreciate that. Another third way, of course, is just plain what we call dual credit. So any student can take this. You don't. You're right about that, Jay. Mm-hmm. You have to qualify for these other programs.
Right.
But dual credit, you can, you know, sign up if you think you're ready for a college class and come here. Sometimes they're offered in the high schools. Again, it's paid for by the high school and by the state reimbursement. So it's free. Basically, you got to get a passing grade, a C, I think, and so on. But and then a lot of students are now graduating even in 4 years from, of course, high school, and at the same month getting a two-year degree from our college.
Wow.
And so you get an associate's degree, and it's all paid for. So that's a terrific thing as far as load of debt and so on. And then you transfer here for a third year and stay here for the fourth year with another college, or you go to the University of Michigan, you know, 2+2.
It certainly, besides having to qualify, it's a little bit more work. It certainly keeps you very busy. Maybe some of your extracurricular activities are a little bit limited because of those extra commitments, but it's a great way to get a head start on your education and maybe even an early first job.
Yes, definitely.
You know, where then you could pay for the rest of college education, whatever direction you wanted to go, because you have that first job too.
Yeah, so. I think, you know, most parents and students need to recognize that although we have a terrific institution here and high quality, people will ask in the workforce, where did you graduate from? Not where did you take the first 2 or 3 years.
Right.
They're gonna say, and so if it's important in your field to have a, quote, prestigious college, then you can still get that, but not be in debt up to your ears, you know, and on the way out.
A few other options. It is, first of all, yes, we do offer remedial education for those that need it. That
yes.
If they come to us, they maybe have a high school degree from somewhere, or they haven't. They've been out of high school quite a while. If they're not able to jump right into college-level English classes, then they might need writing and reading enhancement efforts, and mathematics typically too.
Yep.
But we've offered that those programs for years. English as a second language students,
yes,
in our English Language Institute. That's a great head start to become,
yes,
even a better speaker and writer in English if they were recent graduates, or depending on their home situation, if they were speaking the foreign language at home, and that's quite common sometimes, and that's fine, keeping those traditions alive. But you need the English fluency too. Our program is one of few in the area. I think Wayne State still offers a program, but it's much more expensive.
Yeah, that's
Wayne
right.
State University.
Yeah, that's right. And we have, you know, that's a great point. We've just added 3 new faculty members to basically our core as far as the English as a second language, the English Language Learning Institute. So we're emphasizing that. We want to be a hub for many other colleges in getting what they call the TOEFL scores up, so that you can go, and that's just English proficiency scores. And so the other thing that I want to mention is, you know, we have developmental education classes here, and you're mm-hmm. right, Jay, it's
yeah.
mostly algebra and English and writing.
Yeah.
So, but in about 60% of the students in the nation, they go to the freshman year of community college, need one or more developmental education classes.
Yeah.
Here it's about that or a little bit more. But I don't want the perception to be anything but what it really is, and that is we only have about 5% of our classes are developmental ed. The other 95% are just like you would find at any university or any other college, you know, English mm-hmm. 101 or Algebra 126. They're basically the same kind of things wherever you go. It's taught here by excellent faculty, and they transfer anywhere. So although we certainly do want to take on the challenges of people that aren't quite ready for community college, for any college,
mm-hmm.
We do that. But most of our students come here. We have valedictorians, salutatorians come here, and we have a great honors program. We're going to make that into an honors college within our college.
One of the few two-year schools to have
yes.
start even an honors program.
But we just codified realized a good partnership with Wayne State University, in fact, so thanks to them and as a partner. But Henry Ford College, our honors program, and will be collaborating with Wayne State University's honors program. So you come here for 2 years in our honors program, you can transfer directly into their honors program and get a scholarship from them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So if you want that extra challenge and you're up to it, all valedictorians should consider this. It's
you
an
should.
Option. You know,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, this is a really smart and valuable deal. And I met somebody the other day that started here in dual credit, at Henry Ford College, and not too long ago graduated from Harvard Law School, and is here in the community.
And again, we've had this other option for a long time, but it's always good to mention online instruction in almost every area, wherever appropriate. If you're highly motivated, folks, and again, you probably got that computer access at home, or got a computer at home too. You can take many classes at home.
That's exactly right.
And some require a few more visits to campus. Some are more completely independent that way. But we're at the forefront of online instruction too, if that's appropriate for you. So whatever way, whatever your learning style or your learning needs are, I think it just boggles my mind, since I started here teaching in '68, how many more options there are depending on where you're coming from and what you need, where you need to go.
We hope to increase this a lot more. I read a research article not long ago that that stated that today's student, actually this was last year, but today's student basically in college takes on average one class online. I think it was per semester or per year, and then but in 5 years, which is like tomorrow, you know, in 5 years, the average college student will be taking half of their curriculum online or e-learning. Right. It doesn't mean it's all online. It could be a blended class coming once a week here and doing the rest at home. This helps our students that are, not 18 years old and can't live in our dorm maybe. They've got a family. They've got a full-time job. Mm-hmm. They're going to college is going to be from 9 o'clock at night, have to put the kids to bed, till midnight. Yeah. You know, that's when they're going to be able to be online, go to college, study, and so on. And then come here once a month or once a week, you know, so, and that would be a lot of the case, but also some of it just strictly online. So if you move away from Dearborn, stay connected with us. You can still earn your degree here.
Yeah. Let me bring up the topic. It's always very important for Henry Ford Community College to pass its accreditation, to get its accreditation renewed. And this happens by regional organizations around the country. And ours is now calling itself the Higher Learning Commission?
That's right, Higher Learning Commission.
And formerly, I remember it was North Central Accreditation.
Right. That's right.
But and they're working with guidelines from the federal government now, which is new, and it's a constant process of expected process of assessment and improvement. But we in the past just, you know, I've always been proud to be a teacher here because we in the past always got the longest possible renewal period, usually 10 years. Because we're doing so well, they don't have to bother coming back for a while, you know. But this time, it's pretty intense. They changed the rules a little bit, but we're ready for that, huh?
That's right, Jay. Exactly right. And they have changed. North Central itself has been under tremendous pressure from the federal government, from the Department of Education. And in the last 10 years, of course, has been a lot more regulations on everybody's read about the banking regulations and other regulations on car industries. And so the same thing has happened in spades to higher education. So much more intrusive, if you will, or whatever political bent you have, as far as those regulations. Same thing has happened to us. And North Central, it's now Higher Learning Commission, is under that same kind of pressure, of course, and then they pass that on to us. So it will not be your dad's review, you know, it won't be the 10 years ago. It's much more rigorous. There are core things that they're looking for, commonly expected practices that we have to really get even more going on. And so it's not a slam dunk at all. I'm optimistic. We're working very hard on this to serve our students. And it's things we need to do anyhow, but we will need every faculty and every staff and everybody involved to do well on this one, and because it is a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I was very impressed, first of all, for years, and I was department head for 10 years here in telecommunication performing arts area, and we sort of started, that was my, everybody took one step back when they said, who wants to be a department head? You know, because, well, assessment's starting now. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
But, a tough one. But we learned a lot, and we have the professionals in charge. I'm thinking Betty Chadwick, and she has a timeline. She has all these people working with her, and all the different departments and division areas have their responsibilities, and it's in place,
yeah,
and it's been happening, as you said, for years, but it's pretty intense now. And
it is.
Yeah, who would say no? I mean, some people I know, some faculty who aren't with us anymore because they we're ready to retire, I guess. But I love the challenge here, and nothing wrong with accountability, as long as everybody knows that the measurement tools are being applied fairly, and
that's right.
And that they're going to have a good result too.
Yeah, and we just need to work together on it. Many of these are not our idea or anything like that, but we are up to the task. We want to go beyond it. In fact, you know, we don't want to be a college that just does the minimum. We want to go well beyond that, and so that's the whole purpose. I want to give a shout out to this radio station, WHFR, and of course you've been ahead of us on Henry Ford name anyhow for a long time, and so Henry Ford College, and you were, of course, have been for many, many decades, actually, a part of the Homecoming Festival here in Dearborn.
Yeah.
And a few weekends ago, you set a new record as far as raising money, and more than ever in my notes, anyhow, in the 26 years you've been representing us there.
Well, the city of Dearborn has been very kind to us over the years, giving us a good location.
Yes.
Right where at the north end of the Monroe Street as it comes onto Ford Park Field, and We have a place there. We've actually been out there 22 years, representing the college at Homecoming. The first year, though, we had one of the early box-type cell phones,
okay.
And we were sitting on a picnic table, and it was raining.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and we had an umbrella over our heads. But we were there, and
progress.
We had a sign, you know. But, yeah, so we've moved to having now two tents and selling our logo items and our recycling CDs and LPs, too. We have a lot of vinyl now. We got a big vinyl record show coming up in October here on campus too, which is more popular than ever. So we're just like a lot of the activities on campus that are the campus outreach activities, we're under the gun, and appropriately so, to connect with the community and raise most of the money for our operation ourselves. And it's a valuable learning experience, I'll tell you, but we're happy to do that. It's so much fun, especially at Homecoming, to meet the people, meet our listeners. People have been recognizing since I've been around so long. Oh, you're Jay, aren't you? Oh, you've been listening to the show, huh? And I'm wondering what they're going to say. And John, they said, you know,
positive things about our show.
Where's your sidekick?
Yes.
John had a couple weeks off there, and you know, Jay, you're a lot better when you have somebody else on with you. So I take that to heart. And so John Conroy is here with us on a regular basis again, thank goodness. President Jensen, it's been great having you. I know you have a meeting to go to today to kick off your Labor Day weekend celebration, maybe after that. absolutely, come back and see us, or send one of your minions, as they say, whenever there's a press release or whatever we can do to help promote things. I noticed in terms of Dearborn Public Schools, I'm reaching away from the microphone here, they've got a number of open houses, and our early college open house is going to be held Tuesday, September 16th, not too far away.
Coming right up. Please come.
So anyone interested, high school students or even, you know, people from the community want to find out what's going on so you can spread the word. There's a lot of open houses in the Dearborn Public Schools system, but also for us, too. I always forget to mention, we've got a great child development center.
We do. Yeah, exactly. And we use that as a lab for our students to train, and certainly, and that last I heard, now there's room in that for other children. Mm-hmm. And we just appreciate this station, your service, you and John, and also I'm here.
Don't forget our general manager, Susan McGraw.
Oh, yes, Susan. Yeah, so I like Susan a great deal.
Can't do this without her.
Oh, man, she's a great leader,
yep.
And appreciate her a great deal. And we love this community, appreciate it very, very much. I'm here to serve this college and this community, and we are here to help our students become successful, and that's how we measure our success, is how successful they are. So, and our new brand really is future-driven.
Absolutely.
So you'll see that around. We really believe in that, that we want to be future-driven to meet the needs of our future students.
I think of that every time I get behind the wheel of my car.
Okay.
So.
Good.
Okay. So here we go, folks. This is a couple comments from Jack Lesenberry. Thanks to Michigan Public Radio, and we'll be back with some really important Labor Day weekend local news from Dearborn and the surrounding area right after these two commentaries.
Last week, I went to see Douglas George, Canada's top diplomat in Detroit, mostly to talk about where things stand with the new international trade crossing bridge over the Detroit River. The bridge is now almost certain to be built. But there are a few hang-ups, and one is the concerns of the residents in the Delray neighborhood where the American footprint of the bridge will land. Those who live there want to make sure they aren't trampled on. Now they're finally having their voices heard thanks in part to Detroit's new system of electing council members by district. Exactly a month ago, Detroit City Council was expected to approve the sale of 301 city-owned parcels of land in that neighborhood to the state of Michigan. Michigan would buy them with money provided by the Government of Canada and transfer the land to the new international authority, which is to oversee bridge construction. But the land sale was delayed. New City Councilwoman Raquel Castaneda Lopez represents the area where the bridge will be built. It is a fascinating and diverse district with about equal numbers of Hispanic and African American citizens. Castaneda Lopez told me she wasn't opposed to the bridge. She just wanted to do what was right for the people she represents. She said, "We need to recognize there's a viable community there and that they have rights. What she wants and they want is an agreement to see that there's some community benefits for the more than 2,000 residents of Del Rey." I talked at length to Simone Sagovac, who is the voice of the Southwest Community Benefits Coalition. I found what she had to say quite reasonable. "The coalition is not demanding luxury swimming pools," she told me. That, in fact, was one of the lies spread by agents of rival bridge owner Matty Maroon, who's fought the new bridge for years. Nobody I've met in Del Rey has anything good to say about Maroon, whose minions once panicked some residents by attaching phony, official-looking eviction notices to their front doors. "What we're concerned about," Sagovac told me, "is both air and noise pollution. She doesn't live in Del Rey herself, but near the Ambassador Bridge, 2 miles away. She's been there 23 years and knows about the effects of thousands of trucks. Del Rey is also a district that's seen better days. Those who live there think a little bit of green space isn't too much to ask. They'd also like some of the jobs that are going to be created. Sagovac wants to know that residents whose homes are taken or cut off for the new bridge will not be taken advantage of." Kevin Orr, Detroit's emergency manager, plans to again ask the council to approve the land sale next month. Meanwhile, Sagovac told me her group is trying to get a meeting with the new International Bridge Authority to present their concerns. Canada has a history of doing right by communities in the path of civic projects, and Canadian money is paying for all of this bridge. It would seem only right that we do right by the people of Del Rey as well.
Republican U.S. Senate candidate Terry Lynn Land unveiled a plan yesterday to fix Michigan's roads. Tell us about her proposal, Jack.
Well, the question is whether it will fix roads or not. I'm going to talk about this more at 1:30 today. What former Secretary of State Land is proposing is reducing the federal gas tax from 18.4 cents to 4 cents a gallon. This would presumably deprive Michigan of a lot of money. Michigan gets about $1.2 billion a year in federal highway funding, and her logic is that if that money stayed in Michigan, the lawmakers would be happy and eager to spend it on the roads here. That may be kind of dubious, since despite Governor Snyder's pleading, they haven't come up with any other money for the roads, and it would require them, just to stay where we are now, to do something like double the gas tax. It's sort of a head-scratcher of a plan. It's kind of like the Laffer curve drawn on a napkin, and we'll have to see if it gets any political traction.
Now let's move on to the topic of the environment. Communities are up in arms about oil drilling in their backyards. Both Scio Township near Ann Arbor and Shelby Township in Macomb County recently passed moratoriums on oil drilling. That's after residents voiced their concerns. The energy company drilling in those communities now says it will shut down operations, at least in Shelby Township. But now it looks like Rochester Hills in Metro Detroit is trying to put a moratorium on fracking. That's after the city signed a lease with a company interested in fracking there. Why does all this seem to be happening at once, and what impact can residents make on drilling?
Well, people are worried. They're worried about the environment. They're worried about the effects of this stuff, about bad natural gas smells and water being polluted. We've seen some cases of pipelines breaking in Michigan. In case of fracking, there's a threat that, you know, sometimes they use sulfuric acid that might get in the water. The companies, of course, swear this is all safe, but nobody in Michigan really thinks they're going to be like the Beverly Hillbillies and find millions and millions of dollars of oil in their backyard. They're concerned about this, and there is a legal question, and there's some debate about whether communities can ban this or not, whether it's a community option, whether it's a state option, whether the state's whether it's up to the state to decide what they do or not. There are different kinds of oil and natural gas rights. So this may be sort of legally fought out. In the case of Shelby Township, my guess is that the company just thinks it's not worth the aggravation. This is not, after all, Saudi Arabia. While there is some natural gas and some oil in Michigan, it's not an astronomical amount, and unless the price is at a certain level, it doesn't make any sense to get it out anyway. So, and it's also an election year. So I think people are sort of spooked. It'll be interesting to see whether this lasts or whether it's just temporary.
Meanwhile, Michigan is looking like it will no longer be the dumping ground for other states' radioactive waste. A Wayne County landfill was going to take radioactive waste from a fracking operation in Pennsylvania. But now the governor is ordering a review on Michigan's standards for disposing certain kinds of wastes. Considering Michigan could be using hydraulic fracturing more in the future, why has the issue of what to do with the radioactive waste from fracking not come up before?
Because this year is an election year, and people hadn't really paid much attention to it before. And the last thing Governor Snyder wants is Mark Schauer, the Democratic candidate, saying the governor is allowing poisonous radioactive waste into Michigan, and as governor, I would stop that. And so it's very politically popular to say you don't want radioactive waste, much less waste from other states in your state. So the fact this has come up in an election year sort of skews the consideration of this. Of course, you know, studies are needed to see how safe this is, whether it makes sense to do it. The reason Michigan takes waste of all kinds from other states is because people make money at doing it, including the state makes money at doing it. But in this case, it might be too politically hot to handle. So I would guess you would see some sort of either legal or self-imposed moratorium on this till well after the November election.
All right, Jack, thanks for filling in the details.
Always a pleasure.
That was the review of what's going on in Michigan news from Michigan Radio. Jack Lessenberry being interviewed there by one of their great people. That is a great source of information, michiganradio.org, by the way. And you can get their podcasts sent directly to you if you wanted them, although sometimes we feature them here. Jack Lessenberry also writes for the Metro Times. And so if you want to read his ideas, this week he has his opinion about the new Canadian bridge deal. And he says, Detroit, Lansing, and Washington continue to drag their feet. I mean, Canada wants this to happen. They're going to pay for the bridge, for Pete's sake, up front. And just not a good situation, sort of like trying to fix the holes in our roads, the potholes, the chasms, if you will. Still not happening very, very directly, so very immediately anyway. Maybe when our legislature gets back from their little vacation, something more will happen. Okay, this is the new WHFR Journal, and it is Friday, August the 29th, 2014. Jay Koronick and John Connery with you here. I'm Jay, yes, and that's John. Okay, say hello, John.
Yes, hello, good people.
I'm supposed to say hello, John.
hello, Jay.
You know, like, say goodnight, Gracie, and she says goodnight, Gracie.
Yeah.
Okay. It's Labor Day, and sometimes we forget what these holidays are about, so I turn to the definitive source of information in the world, Wikipedia. Which is not. That's ironic, of course. You realize that a lot of this information is just placed there, and unless some other person corrects mistakes, everybody who reads it believes it is the total truth. But this is, I think, pretty good. Okay. Labor Day in the United States is a holiday celebrated on the first Monday in September. Okay. The original idea was one that came in the last 25 years of the 19th century by various labor unions, such as the Central Labor Union and the Knights of Labor here in the United States. The Knights of Labor, by the way, organized the first parade in New York City. And however, there was, of course, the problem with, in this country, politically, it's always something political, right? You didn't want to have it when all the more than 80 countries in the world have it, because Labor Day, which is our term and a few other countries' term for it, is synonymous with or linked with the International Workers' Day, which occurs on May 1st each year. And that means there's a connection to communism and socialism, in which labor is an important part of the system, and the workers are an important component, rather than the people on the bottom in capitalism who don't usually have a say in anything that goes on in their society. No disrespect to capitalism, but I'm just saying the capitalist system is not controlled by people on the bottom. It's controlled by people on the top. All right? Okay. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that's the way it is. And so when the idea came about on what day to hold this, they decided to not have it on May 1st for the what they thought at the end of the 19th century was a political connotation that wasn't positive in their ideas at the time. And so that's why we do it the first Monday of September. By the way, Canada also celebrates on the first Monday in September. And they were, in fact, the idea for this whole parade and celebration came to the American Federation of Labor in 1882, after their leader witnessed the annual Labor Festival, which was held in Toronto, Canada. So he had to have a little trip to Canada, and that's when the idea said, hey, this is a pretty good idea. It helps to, you know, make the point that even in capitalism, the people on the bottom are extremely important. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Without the workers, you're not going to get anything done. And you might say, well, in a few years, we'll just have robots. Hmm. Yeah, but there's still got to be people to design and build the robots. We'll always need workers. They just may be a little more highly skilled than they have been in the past. Okay, and of course, the pattern of celebration is a street parade. In Detroit on Monday, we're having Vice President Joe Biden, old silver tongue Joe. Jon Stewart usually makes a lot of jokes on his Comedy Central show, The Daily Show, as it's called, which isn't daily. It's only Monday through Thursday. But anyway, because our vice president has sometimes misspoken about certain things, and in a humorous way, usually. But anyway, he's going to be the one to do the big Labor Day speech in Detroit. Often the Democratic candidate for president in those years when we elect a president, not this year, folks, 2 years away, that they often speak right here in Detroit. It used to be a tradition that the Democratic Party candidate for president would speak at the Labor Day Festival parade in downtown Detroit. Okay. Interestingly, it's also a retail sale day. And it's ironic because you think on Labor Day, if you were a laborer, you could have the day off. Well, some retailers claim that Labor Day, that Monday, is one of the largest sale dates of the year, second only to the Christmas season's Black Friday. Huh. So they call it Black Monday, I guess, if they want to. I don't know why it's called black, but anyway. Oh, because they sell so much, they go into the black.
Businesses go into the black.
They've been losing money there, you know, all year long, and here comes Black Friday, and now they're in the black again, which means they're in the profit, getting a profit for their business for the year.
So the workers are off that day. They have to go back to work the next day to continue to make that money.
But it's the irony is that people in retail sector not only work on Labor Day, because it's such an important day, you need somebody in the stores.
Right.
You know, to sell the stuff, but they work longer hours too, usually on Labor Day. So anyway, it's just, that's the way we do it. By the way, as of 2012, only 3% of those employed in the retail sector, those people that have to work on the holiday and longer hours, only 3% are members of a labor union. And if they had a labor union, maybe they might be paid a little more. Or maybe they wouldn't be exploited so much. Okay, all the opinions on this show, John.
The claims, and we are opinions expressed by our hosts, by Jay or I.
And our guests.
And our guests are on this program are not necessarily those of anyone else's at Henry Ford College.
Nope. Didn't get President Jensen's approval of my saying that about unions. Although I'm a member, proudly a member of the teachers' union here. Actually, now I'm a member of the part-time or adjunct faculty union.
Adjunct. Mm-hmm.
And I was a member, of course, for 40 years of the full-time faculty union. And always great organizations to support me and the positive goals of a good education. It's not just for, they want less hours a week and they want more pay. Our unions and teacher unions typically want the best in education, too. And they constantly are trying to get contractual language to improve the situation for their students, not just for themselves. And this is the actual fact, although the state of Michigan legislature has now made some of those things that are good for education that are in teacher contracts impossible to do. Saying, well, you can't be an administrator. You're just a lowly teacher. So get those things out of the contract. When in fact, it's things that are actually beneficial. And teachers over the years have gone to the picket lines, gone on strike for things other than improvement in hours and benefits and wages. But it's good for the students. So I'm just speaking as somebody that's been a teacher for at the college level for now 46 years. And I know it's true certainly of the college teacher unions, and I know that the K-12 unions, my daughter is in MEA as a teacher in Southfield, and things are not good. There's almost nothing that she can do to improve the educational system. It's all up to the administrators and the state of Michigan, the legislature, who I don't really think understands what education is all about because of what they've done. It doesn't make sense to me. And, of course, I'm talking about the majority of those people in the legislature because it's always the majority and the governor of the same political party that actually is what accomplishes anything or could, on a good day, change something for the better. And I just think we need more of that. So that's a Labor Day story, folks. Happy shopping or happy being together with family. And watch out for those, was it for Christmas they used to do turkeys in some way that they used to explode? Some sort of cooking turkeys frozen in a... Well, nobody does turkeys. They do hot dogs and hamburgers for Labor Day.
Hot dogs and hamburgers Labor Day, or ribs.
Yeah. So remember labor. Remember the people at labor. Remember the people all on the bottom. And maybe they'll get a living wage someday, too. Okay. Well, a couple of big stories here in Dearborn that just on pressandguide.com. Here in Dearborn, what about all that trash that's piled up on your streets? Well, you know, the city council, I said last week, approved an extra $1 million in Dearborn just for extra trash pickup for materials that were damaged by the floods here in Dearborn. And so tomorrow is the day. It's going to be a city blitz, but not a battle. Well, a battle. 100 trash trucks are set for a city blitz tomorrow, Saturday, August 30th. And, of course, if you're listening to the podcast next week, I'm sorry you missed it. But residents, they say, should get their materials to the curb by 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, Saturday morning. Keep the streets clear of parked vehicles, too, to allow the collection crews clear access to the trash. So, got that? Got that, everybody? Tell your friends, neighbors, spread the word in your neighborhood. Tomorrow's the day for the City Blitz. In Dearborn only, I don't know about other communities, just Dearborn only. It starts at 7 a.m. in the morning. 100 extra trash trucks will be out there to collect the flood damaged materials. I will say in my neighborhood, there's been some people had things out there for over 2 weeks now. So they've got to do it. They've got to do it now. And remember, it's also by city council mandate, completely illegal. You'll get ticketed. I don't know, is it a felony? It's at least a misdemeanor. I have to pay a big fine if you start rummaging through that trash because some of it may be got mold, mildew. It may not. It's a health reason. Okay, so you might say, oh, that looks like a nice table. I could fix that up for my basement. Yeah, not if it's got terrible disease-ridden mold and mildew on it, and even just moving it, you might contaminate yourself or others. So you may not go through the trash picking up items that you think you want. In better days, when it wasn't this flood damage stuff, sure, I think that's a great way to recycle stuff. Just a lot of people set things out and they disappear the next morning, and other people have them. It's sort of like a, what is that called? It's a website, a Craigslist thing. You know, just Craigslist. A lot of the items say, "I got a bike, I don't want here. Come by and pick it up. 10 speed, whatever." You know, and somebody will come by and get it, and that's cool. So, but no trash scavenging for a couple of months, actually. All right, and tomorrow's the big trash blitz.
Now, Jay, you say it's starting from 7 a.m.
7 a.m. Saturday.
How long?
Until the end of the day, I guess. Day? Okay. Yeah. There's nothing that it's going to continue next week, so we're going to try to all do it tomorrow. Wow. Also, if you've been wondering about the additional lawsuit that the Bible Believers Group. Well, this is from a couple of years ago, folks. You know, the festival, the Arab American Chamber of Commerce sponsored summer festival in 2012, I think. There was some violence, and the Bible Believers Group said their rights were violated when they denounced Islam at the festival and were pelted with debris. Water bottles and rocks were thrown at the group after they told Muslims at the festival that they were sick, quote-unquote, and would, quote, burn in hell, unquote, while carrying a pig's head. They carried the pig's head. And the Wayne County Sheriff's Office was responsible in those for that event for police protection. And, the judge dismissed the lawsuit. Judge Patrick Duggan dismissed any relation to the mayor, I wonder? No. Spelled the same. Dismissed the lawsuit. The appeals court ruled in a 2-1 decision that the sheriff's office was not regulating public speech, but was trying to maintain order, and upheld the lawsuit's dismissal. However, the dissenting judge, of course, he was overruled, but he said authorities from the sheriff's office were illegally exercising, quote, a heckler's veto, unquote. According to the Associated Press. His opinion was that the First Amendment wouldn't be needed if it applied only to a well-mannered marketplace of ideas. So he's in favor a little bit more unruly, but still freedom of expression. So I'm just saying it's been ruled now. Now, of course, that festival was canceled in 2013 and was never scheduled for this year. We don't know about the future. The city would like to move it to Ford Woods Park. That was the last suggestion 2 years ago. And the American Arab Chamber of Commerce really wanted to do something related to Warren Avenue to help support the businesses on Warren Avenue more directly rather than moving it. We've got some other events to talk about, John.
Yes, and keeping with the Arab theme, we have a culinary walking tour that begins on September the 13th and continues to the 30th on Tuesdays and Saturdays.
Boy, that's a long walk.
That's a long
walk. Oh, you mean individual days.
Individual days.
They're not walking 17 days in a row.
No.
Okay.
Museum docents will offer guided tours of select markets, bakeries, and specialty food retailers along Warren Avenue in East Dearborn. And where else would you want to go for that kind of concentration of food?
There's limited space for this, and it happened in the spring, too, and it was successful. They're bringing it back, and Yala Eats, they got to go online or call somebody, don't they, to be part of those walking tours?
Yes, they do. The online is contact Kay Solarski at accesscommunity.org.
Okay, that's Kim Solarski. She's at the Arab National Museum, too, if you just want to contact Kim Solarski about the Yala Eats walking tour of Dearborn. You do have to sign up, get your name in there in advance for it. And it sounds like great fun, even if you lived in Dearborn but never have sampled the restaurants that they intend to take you past, if you can not stop off for too long. Yes,
I should add that the website is www.arabamericanmuseum.org/yallEat,
which is Y-A-L-L-E eat. There you
Y-A-L-L-A.
Go. A-A, I'm sorry,
it's
eat.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
Is there an exclamation mark after that on the website or not? No.
Nope, is not.
Right. All right, that's important. And there's a Dearborn Symphony Orchestra benefit coming up on the 6th, and that is next week, Saturday. That's a little bit pricey. It's Cars, Cigars, and Jazz?
Cars, Cigars, and Jazz, September 6th, 6 to 11 p.m. It benefits the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, and it's $35 a person. But there's live jazz music and a silent auction. There'll be small plates from local restaurants, which are always delicious. And spectacular cars, not only with any kind of model, but with stylish models.
Where are they? What location are they doing that in?
This is going to be at the West Parking Deck at West Downtown Dearborn.
Okay, so it's like a little bit out of doors, but it's under the parking structure coverage, so it's a fresh air. And for those that want to smoke a cigar, I guess they could. But you say, well, I don't want to be inside of a room where a lot of people smoking cigars. If that's your opinion, you don't have to worry about it. It's open air there. So that sounds like a fun thing to do. And it's $35 a person, I think, but it'll support the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, whose first season opening concert is in October. We'll get you more information about that as one of the co-sponsors of the Dearborn Symphony here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Okay, and also we missed Friday. The Elder Fest.
Yes. A week from today, September 5th at Ford Field Park, will be a free, fun-filled day of outdoor activities planned for the senior citizens. Dearborn area seniors aged 50 and over are invited to attend this year's Elder Fest, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. on September 5th. And this is hosted by the Senior Services Division of the Dearborn Rec and Parks Department.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I grabbed something from, I think it's a CBS... News local website, but it was just announced. Uh-oh, where is it here? I'll grab it. Okay, nope, not there. Here it is. Okay, we keep the pages loose. Turning on the air. That's our news show. You know that we're reading from stuff because you can hear the paper shuffling. Alan Park. You know it's under emergency financial management, but the good news is they might get out from under that, what are they called, a white elephant? They put out $12 million for a supposedly a movie studio complex a couple years back, and the studio came in there and did some stuff, and they were gone in a year, and so it was there with $12 million in debt, which is the primary reason that they're under emergency financial management right now. So they've had it up for sale for a couple of years, and now they got a buyer. So congratulations, they got a buyer. It's it will mean a tax saving to taxpayers in the long run, and it's just a wonderful thing. And also, by the way, there's going to be this is interesting that City Hall, and I always thought it was such a pretty building right there. If you go down Southfield Expressway, as it sort of curves off into Allen Park, heading to Lincoln Park, you see the City Hall on the left, a nice brick building there. And I thought, oh, that's really nice, and it's easy for people to find in Allen Park. Well, City Hall in Allen Park, that building is in need of roof and other renovation, and it's so damaged by water and other things over the years that the renovation is cost prohibitive, which means you got to tear it down. You can't even fix it, because it'd be cheaper to tear it all down and build another building. Well, they're not going to have to, because they're going to be sharing some of the space of these other buildings, at least temporarily anyway. And I think the idea was the Stausenberg, it was a sort of a business school, was renting part of that Unity Studios area.
Stausenberg.
And so City Hall is going to move itself as of, I think, December 1st or sooner. Unfortunately, my printout has an ad right on top of it. You know how that's sneaky? You print something out from the internet, and all of a sudden, an advertisement comes on top of it. Shame on them. Okay. Anyway, so... Allen Park City Hall is going to be torn down, and they're going to move into, at least temporarily anyway, part of the Unity Studio complex where the Stausenberg school was. And I don't know if Stausenberg's still around or going to have classes anywhere. I don't know that. But congratulations to Allen Park. Okay? I mean, that's really great. You know, the city got into this because they had to issue $25.5 million in bonds in 2009. To finance the land acquisition. And after review of city finances, the state said officials paid about $11 million more than the property was worth. So somebody gave them the wrong assessment. And they put out the money. And I even said, a person that knows about movie studios from my telecom background, crazy. It's crazy what they did. They never even asked anybody who was involved in the real motion picture business. Like in Hollywood.
Right.
Well, this producer said he was from Hollywood, but it's interesting, all my contacts around here, I never heard of the guy before.
Yep.
Yep.
No, I was going to mention
just yes.